Hello and welcome to Written in Uncertainty, an Elder Scrolls podcast sat firmly in the grey maybe of Tamriel, and proud member of the Robots Radio Podcast Network. My name is Arimetheus, and today we're looking at one of the most consistent and possibly most evil characters in Tamriel, someone who has been around for millennia and learned the lessons that a Dragonbreak could teach. Today we're asking, who is Manimarco? Before we get to that though, I'd just like to get some of the usual admin out of the way. There is no network news this week as far as I'm aware, so it just left me to say that have a check out of the network sponsors for the Robot Radio, one of which is audiobooks.com. You have two free audiobooks and a 30-day trial, and in the US a monthly subscription is something like $5 a month for an audiobook a month as well. So please go and check that out. The link for that will be in the description for this podcast. And if you want to check out any of the other stuff that is supported by that supports the Robot Radio Network, please go and check out writtenincertainty.com/sponsors. There's a whole bunch of stuff on there, from VPN subscriptions to discounts on games and loot crates and all sorts. So go and check that out. And I'd just like to also read out a review that I received on Apple Podcasts in the last week or two from Lambda Nerd, who has said, "I have a million positive things to say, but let me just say the following. I can't stop listening. Thank you for this amazing podcast." Thank you, Lambda Nerd. Thank you so much for your kind words. I'm really, really glad that you're enjoying the podcast, and please keep on listening. I will try and produce content that is worth listening to for you, and I just hope you carry on enjoying it. Thank you very much. And in one last piece of podcasting news, your biggest fan, yep, that's actually the name, your biggest fan is my latest patron. Thank you ever so much for your support, your biggest fan. I'm really, really glad that you're enjoying my content enough to support me. If anyone else wants to support this podcast and get exclusive access to the notes that I make for each episode and early access to all the content that I put out, head over to patreon.com/writtenincertainty. And there's also a tip jar at Ko-fi, that's ko-fi/Arimetheus, if you just want to stick a one-off tip in the jar. So thank you ever so much, guys, and I'm always grateful for all the report I've received, both past and present. Just thank you so much. I am bowled over that people are happy to throw money my way because I produce this stuff. Thank you so much, and I hope that I continue to make content that's worth that to you all for as long as I can. Thank you. And one final thing before we get to Manimarco, I have an addendum on the episode on Oblivion that I did last time. It always happens that you finish an episode and then you find something else that you really think should have gone in. But one particular addendum here I wanted to bring up, that the Lesser Daedra's loyalties to Oblivion and how they're connected seems to be at the level of the Daedra's being, or at least the connection to Oblivion itself. Because in the Elder Scrolls Online, Herald Kixathi managed to sever herself from Oblivion with the help of Hermaeus Mora and bound herself to Mundus instead. So there's potentially something about how souls can be moved between one realm and another that can be an intentional process. Although Happy did also point out in that particular conversation that happened on the Loreseekers Discord that it might just be a matter of attuning to the Sky Shards and mucking around that way and doing similar things to the Vestige, as in the piece of material that allows the stuff around Oblivion to coalesce. And once you have that, you exist just as a Vestige, and then you can absorb stuff from Sky Shards, you can reattune that way. That's possibly how that works, but I don't know. And that also means that, is it possible that binding to Daedral Lords is a matter of attunement in a similar way? I'm not sure, but there are also the possibilities of oaths and loyalty and so on amongst the Daedra, which means that there may be other things enforcing that as well. It might be a bit more than just that attunement, I suppose. And now I suppose we should get to Manamarco. Before we do begin, though, I just want to say that this is my own take on Manamarco, and definitely not the whole truth of the matter, I'm sure. I'm sure there's things that I'm possibly likely to miss out or misinterpret or something like that. If you have other ideas about how Manamarco is seen or what kind of a character he is, and if you want to pick me up on anything, please, please do let me know. I'll be available at writtenuncertaintypodcast@gmail.com for emails. My Twitter is @Aramithius. There is a link to the Discord for this podcast in the podcast description. And this will also be posted up on Reddit at some point so that you can go and check it out there and leave comments and so on and explore your own ideas there. I'd absolutely love to hear what you guys think about this and what you guys think about one of the most consistent villains across all of the Elder Scrolls. And so finally, we have got to Manamarco. Manamarco was born as an Ultima at some point in the First Era. There are suggestions that he might also have been from a royal family, or at least have royal blood or some connection to that, but that's not entirely clear who he would have been connected to. I think that was a claim that was made by the King of Worms in The Elder Scrolls II, and we'll see a little later as to why that might not necessarily be Manamarco. Either way, he was taken at an early age by the Psijic Order, however they select people. There's quite an arcane process, apparently. And struck up a friendship with Vernus Galerion, who was at that point also a Psijic. He was, however, rather more taken with soul music and necromancy than Vernus was, and so he went on to develop that particular art to heights that no other necromancers had until that point. And so I think I'm confident in calling him the father of modern necromancy on Tamriel. He's certainly gone out of his way to stifle alternative uses for the craft, which I will get to as well. Some have called him the first lich, but I don't see any evidence for that outside of the poem Manamarco, King of Worms, which may just have been using flowery poetic language and also gets quite a bit wrong if you go and check the dates and so on. So possibly his biggest achievement while he was still a mortal was the creation of black soul gems, which circumvent Mage's Guild restrictions on soul-trapping sapient beings and allow even weak soul-trapping spells to capture the souls of what we can reasonably call people. He clung on to some form of life throughout a huge chunk of Tamrielic history, despite being imprisoned by Molag Bal during the Interregnum. I'm expecting future expansions of The Elder Scrolls Online to provide some way story linked to his escape or his possible resurrection. I do think there's an option to kill Manamarco in the main quest, so there'll be some way of getting round that. He probably, only probably, ascended to godhood following the Warcup in the West in the Third Era, using the power of the Mantella. He may also have existed in some fashion as a mortal after that point as well. And I'm going to be using the various different types of person that he may or may not have been as a framework for talking about him in a little more depth. Before we get to that though, I would like to talk about the reason that he's got lots of potentially different ways of being seen, and that's because we have different appearances of Manamarco in the games, and they're not all necessarily connected. We first hear about Manamarco in the first Elder Scrolls game in Arena, when the Necromancer's Amulet is mentioned as, quote, the last surviving relic of the mad sorcerer Manamarco. Now that sets up Manamarco as a necromancer, but the tone is a little strange. It sounds like he's already been dead for a while by the time we come across the amulet, because living things don't typically have relics. We also have a character called the King of Worms in The Elder Scrolls II Daggerfall, who is very often equated with Manamarco, And the place that most explicitly does this is The Elder Scrolls Online. And the poem I mentioned earlier even spells it out. The title is Manimarco, King of Worms. However, that wasn't necessarily the case in The Elder Scrolls 2 itself, or at least when it was written. And I have to thank Rock from Cypheree's Arteum Lore Pub for pointing that out. It's not something I noticed when I was first going through the material for this episode. That's one of the perils of using search terms to wade through the immense amounts of content there is for The Elder Scrolls lore, is that if there isn't any content that matches your terms, you miss the fact that there's no content. There's actually no mention of Manimarco as the King of Worms in the game Daggerfall. That only shows up in the writing of the later games. The first text in this world's chronology that equates Manimarco with the King of Worms is the book Where Were You When the Dragon Broke, which calls Manimarco the God of Worms. We have to wait until The Elder Scrolls Online to get an explicit link with the title King of Worms. And that then links back to Manimarco, that Manimarco is the God of Worms by the time of The Elder Scrolls 3, and the God of Worms and the King of Worms get linked up at a later point. So, assuming that they're all the same thing, Manimarco gets to be the God of Worms by using the Totem of Tiber Septim to control the Numidium. He then ascends to godhood during the Warp in the West, becoming the Necromancer's Moon, and that could have been the end of it. However, we see Manimarco again as a mortal in The Elder Scrolls 4, where he's attempting to subvert the Mages Guild. There have been a bunch of attempts to explain this over the years, many of which hinge on the notion of dragon breaks. The gist of most of them is that the part of the fix for the Warp on the West makes all timelines true, which means that Manimarco both ascended godhood and did not. There were timelines where he both got hold of the totem and did not get hold of the totem. So one version of him becomes a god, and one carries on being a mortal. There are also quite a few people who question whether the Ultima we meet in The Elder Scrolls 4 is actually Manimarco. That's mainly because it's a relatively simple fight to defeat him, and they think that the King of Worms, who survived for centuries, shouldn't be such a pushover. This sort of thing also gets argued with Alduin in The Elder Scrolls 5, but I'm always a little hesitant to equate game performance with lore capabilities, so I wouldn't say that was definite. But I can certainly see Manimarco being the type to create a simulacrum of himself to ensure his survival, so it's entirely possible that The Elder Scrolls 4 version of Manimarco was some sort of fake that was hanging around, some mystical body double. There's no indication that he's actually done that, but I can certainly see that it's possible. Or we just take the King of Worms Manimarco distinction to be the entirety of the matter, and he never became the Necromancer's Moon, which sidesteps the whole question. He just hung around as the Ultima we meet in The Elder Scrolls 4 and didn't do a whole lot else. But that does leave us with the question of why The Elder Scrolls Online equates the two, which feels like a bit too much of an obstacle for me. There is one possibility that reconciles the two perspectives quite neatly, though, that I haven't actually seen anywhere. The book The Necromancer's Moon says this, quote, "Stay faithful to the Order of the Black Worm, and in time your loyalty will be rewarded. Soon he will return to set the world right in due time, and those who would stand in his way will suffer eternally at his hands, just as those who stood opposite before." Now this suggests that Manimarco will return as some sort of avenging figure to right all the wrongs and purge the world, like several religious figures in religions in our own world, like the Second Coming of Christ or the Mahdi in Islam. It's possible that the Manimarco that we see in The Elder Scrolls 4 is Manimarco returned in this fashion, that he is reincarnated as a mortal to purge the world, that was part of the process, while the Necromancer's Moon is then just an indicator of his divinity. I'm not entirely sure either way. But regardless of his status as a god, I think we can agree that Manimarco was a Mer at one point. So now we can start talking about his career as a mage. Manimarco was apparently picked up by the Psijiks at a young age. We don't know for sure why, but Vanis Galarian calls him a brilliant novice in the book Artaeum Lost. So maybe his talents were just obvious from the start of his life. Exactly when that was, we're not sure. We both know that Manomarco was present during the Middle Dawn, and that he was expelled from the Psijic Order around the time of the founding of the Mages Guild in the year 230 of the Second Era. That puts him as a potentially as a member of the Order for over 1,000 years. Granted, part of that was the Middle Dawn Dragonbreak, but even so, that's an incredible amount of time to be studying as a mage for. And I think that puts him on a level with Diveth, Fear, and the Tribunal in terms of sheer staying power. Possibly Vanis Galarian too, but we don't know when Vanis Galarian died, and he's certainly the shortest lived of all of those, which I suppose makes Manomarco the longest lived Ultima we know of in the Elder Scrolls. And now I've said that, I'm sure I'm going to have missed someone. Please, please, please let me know so that I can put a correction out next episode. writtenuncertaintypodcast@gmail.com or @Aramithius on Twitter. Please let me know when I'm wrong. The way that Galarian talks about Manomarco, it feels like they had a shared time of development in the Psijic Order, like they were novices together and were kind of competing in the classroom sort of thing. They were apparently competing right from the start, and that's not really a surprise. And the way this is set up as an ongoing rivalry that we know is going to end in tears, or shipping, one of the two. It all ended in tears, as Vanis finds Manomarco consorting with the Dark Powers, or bad things, or something of that nature, on Artaeum, and he gets exiled by the Order, and then starts to build his worm cult across Tamriel, which sort of hangs around across the continent, occasionally attempting apocalyptic things when the plot suits. And in their way, both Galarian and Manomarco are critiques of the Psijic Order. Galarian sought to democratize the Order, possibly as a form of industrialist. I really like the image of Galarian as someone who was trying to industrialize Tamriel using magic, while Manomarco takes the seclusion and isolation and accumulation of power to its logical conclusion. If the Psijics are not part of Mundus, then they should have no regard for Mundus's cares or their laws, and even the grave and faithful counsel that's provided by the Psijics, to quote their book, The Old Ways, is given from a position of superiority. The book says that the Psijics give counsel to, quote, lesser men. And Manomarco's perspective is simply that he's not bound by any of the rules that other lesser people should concern themselves with. One thing that Manomarco is concerned about, however, is necromancy. He started studying it on Artaeum and then got banished for his trouble. He seems to show a degree of passion for the craft itself when he's building up the worm cult, because we have this quote from the book A World of Corpses. Are these miserable wretches truly the inheritors of the dark practice? Are these the necromancers that shall carry our glorious discipline into the eras to come? Perish the thought! That he calls it our glorious discipline, and not just a means to the end, to an end of power, would suggest to me that he cares about how necromancy is done, and he wants capable mages to be necromancers, or he wants necromancers to be capable mages for the good of the craft itself. And that isn't to say that even when he does encounter capable necromancers, he's not got his own agenda. The book, The Legend of Vastari, recounts how Manomarco reacts when another necromancer with different goals works with him, particularly this passage, quote, Vastari had found what she was looking for, but Manomarco was furious. What use was a soul gem that could not be used to fuel an enchantment? He demanded Vastari find a way to modify her creation to his purposes. And his own purposes there were the creation of black soul gems, which Abnathan claims are a recent invention in a Loremaster's archive that's recorded in the Interregnum. They allow for the accumulation of soul energy from sentient mortals, potentially even without a spell, if you believe some of the books about them, that it's, you literally hold them and it will leech out your soul. And that, or at least hold them with bare hands, I should say. That's quite groundbreaking in terms of soul engineering innovation in its way. Manamarco does have very definite goals for necromancy and for the worm cult that he founded after leaving Artem, and that goal is to increase his own power. He's not averse to the idea of others holding it too, because he offered Galarian the opportunity to join him, although in fairness that might have just been an opportunity to shut him up and knife him in the back when he had the chance, but increasing everyone else's capabilities doesn't seem to be his primary goal, even if he does care about necromancy. It's possible that he may have some form of reverence for Daedra, as we have this very obsequious passage in the book on Soul Shriven. "It is by the grace of my lord and master Molag Bal that I, Manamarco, was gifted this meagre knowledge regarding the process of creating the Soul Shriven." Now, if we take that at face value, as well as a few recruitment drives he seemed to have engaged in to convert other Daedra worshippers to Molag Bal, then he may at one point have been a Molag Bal worshipper. However, the tone of the above passage is possibly a little too crawling for someone who's as powerful and as proud as Manamarco. So he might simply have been using that text as a cover, and that tone as a cover. I think that's more likely, personally, because this text was written when the Vestige, the player character in the Elder Scrolls Online, was alive. It references the Vestige later on in the text, and so Manamarco was already over 1,000 years old at this point, probably. I also think it's likely that he was being entirely self-serving, because the line from "Where Were You When the Dragon Broke?" talks about Manamarco learning his mystery from the Murakati selectives. If he's been hanging on to those ideas of becoming a god since then and learning the core basis of it from the selectives, then he's been plotting to be a god for a long time. The selectives had been gone for over 1,000 years by the time of the events of the Plane Meld, and so Manamarco's been sitting on that knowledge quite a bit. Manamarco's key learning from the selectives was one of the core tenets of hermetic magic in this world, the basic sympathetic principle of as above, so below, that informs everything from astrology to alchemy to voodoo dolls. The act of altering things in the heavens in such a way that they affect everywhere else is the key here. And the way that the selectives did it was that they made a dragon break, so the hurling disc was a thing, and so the laws of Mundus were suspended, and so they could be fiddled with more easily. I would potentially come up with a cheesy pun here about reaching heaven by violence, but I'm not sure that what Manamarco actually did was a walking way, because six are the formulas of reaching heaven by violence, and they're the walking ways. The voiceover of the King of Worms ending of The Elder Scrolls 2 indicates that he used the Mantella to power his ascension, but I think the quote from "Where Were You" also involves the dragon break in some way. I've also seen it said that the Warp in the West was a similar and more successful effort to what Manamarco was trying to do during the Plane Meld. In that, he was trying to use the Amulet of Kings with its Oversoul of Emperors to trap Molag Bal and take his place. Now, given his efforts with Black Soul Gems, I don't think it's unreasonable to assume that Manamarco would have used Baal's power, Baal's soul, to power his own ascension efforts, although that doesn't involve a dragon break, so we're still left with an incomplete picture. Maybe I'm just getting too hung up on the fact that Manamarco tried to ascend using gems twice. Once he ascended, Manamarco became the Revenant, the Necromancer's moon. That's since become something that's revered by necromancers and slowed the world over. It seems that since then, he has continued to be of some use to those who practice necromancy. To quote the book Necromancer's Moon again, "The Revenant, the Necromancer's moon, watches over us all. His form, ascended to godhood, has taken its rightful place in the sky and hides the enemy Arkay from us, so that we may serve him. Watch for the signs. when the heavenly light descends from above, hasten to his altars and make your offering, so that he may bless you with but a taste of his true power. Grand soul gems offered to him will be darkened, and can be used to trap the souls of the unwitting, a feat even the great Nagasta would marvel at. This allows people to create black soul gems and carry on being necromancers much more easily. It may be implied, but in hiding the enemy RK, I think that Manimarco might also be weakening some of RK's other rules. There's absolutely nothing in the text to support that. That's entirely my own assumption, but it would make sense to me that RK's rights don't hold as much power when RK is obscured from Mundus. But again, that's just me speculating. And just one final thought, maybe, just maybe, Ascension wasn't Manimarco's end goal. One of his lines from The Elder Scrolls IV says this, quote, "Power, my dear friend, I seek power, and so I acquire and study those who have some degree of it. We are after the same things, your guild and I. Yet you worry about good and evil and do not accept that they are manifestations of the same thing." Aside from sounding like a more long-winded version of a line from Professor Quirrell in Harry Potter and the Philosopher's Stone, this feels like Manimarco's ambition is unlikely to end. You can always get more power. There's always more to accumulate until you control everything in the universe. Subverting RK is two fingers to everyone who's often thwarted his designs to do that, and possibly the biggest one because RK and necromancy are diametrically opposed type things, but Manimarco might not actually be done. There's always more control to be had over things until you control everything, or all things are you, which is functionally the same thing if total control is your goal. And just a final thought to leave that on, does that make Manimarco a Sharmat? I doubt it, but I will leave you to consider. Next time, we will be moving from Arteum to Somerset and considering what the religious history of the Ultima is. And until then, this podcast remains a letter written in uncertainty. You've been listening to Written in Uncertainty, a podcast written and presented by Aramithius and edited and mastered by Dopportunity. The music for this podcast has been kindly provided by Jan Glembotsky. Check them out on SoundCloud under Songs from the Lost Land, and I'll see you next time.
Hey, I'm Tom.
And I'm Stuart.
And we're from the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
We talk about all things connected to D&D lore.
And we're on the Robots Radio Network, so if you're into Dungeons & Dragons or you're into lore, then come check us out. You can find us on any podcatcher, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, wherever you get podcasts.
Roll more dice.
That's the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast.
Hello.
Hi.
Do you like bad movies?
Do you find yourself defending bad movies, saying things like, well, the soundtrack was okay, or the costumes were pretty fun?
From the previous hosts of It's Not That Bad podcast, we bring you Fresh Tomatoes, the movie podcast, from Simone LaRue and Chad Ekovitz.
Every week, we review two movies that did not do well critically, but we say, hey, there are some nice things about them. Maybe Rotten Tomatoes was wrong.
Maybe they're all fools, and you should watch these movies regardless. We'll also talk about scenes that could have saved it, and we'll often refer to Simone's cats because they're amazing and adorable, and we love them.
And at the end of each review, we will tell you whether we would watch this movie again, or in what circumstances we would recommend you watch this movie.
So, join us on July 9th for the first drop of our main episode, and then 2 days later for our drop of our minisodes.
And on Robots Radio Podcast Network. Come see us on July 9th. We love you so much already. Bye! Bye.
Rated M for mature.
Because we don't believe in scripted advertisements, we're gonna do this raw.
I'm regretting this decision.
No, you're not. This is the DL, Weekly Gaming News. There's nothing to regret here, because it's your source for everything in the gaming world. Every week, we bring it to you. Unscripted. Unfiltered. That's why it's rated M for mature, right, Brenna?
Among many, many other reasons.
I am one of your hosts, Jameson.
And as he already said, I am Brenna, the other glorious part to this quality podcast.
You can find us every week wherever you listen to your podcasts at DL Gaming News. And you can also find us on Instagram and Twitter if you want some gaming news in your social media feed every day at DL Gaming News.
And you can find us individually if you really, really, truly want to see our faces. I am at DL_MotherGoose.
And I'm at DL Jameson. And this was an advertisement. Go fuck yourselves.